Hello, and welcome to Recent Activity, your new favorite entertainment review podcast that attempts to cover every film, every show, all at once. I am your co-host, Andrew Morgan. With me, as always, is a man who was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching giant monkeys right before she died, Mr. Shane Beauregard. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. That was good. I don't know what we're talking about. We crossed movies, but that's okay.
Yeah, man. I used the Madam Web structure.
Yeah, I know. You threw me off for a minute there, man. Yeah. Good to see you. I missed you here for a while.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been a couple of weeks. It's all my fault for anybody who's keeping score. I got a fucking nasty-ass cold again that just never died. And, of course, annihilated my throat and everything else. So it's hard to podcast when you're barely squeaking those words out, but we're back.
We're back, baby.
We got a six pack of movies here because Shane, you just kept rolling, baby. So like there's, a couple of movies in here that only you took on. I think I took on the devil a little bit more. So we'll talk about some more horror stuff. And then we have some crossover, mostly all out at the theater, which is encouraging because I know like the box office is like way behind. And you know what's the sad part, Shane? Not to be like dour up top, for how much you, myself, and many people loved Dune Part 2, it's like not doing that as good as I hoped. And they're already putting out on PVOD in like a week.
I know. I'm a little surprised. We hyped it up and thought it would have some runway, but that runway is closed.
Yeah, and listen, and also for the numbers, if you look at it, the tough part is we can't compare it to Part 1 because it came out during the COVID times, so we don't have a good barometer. But I don't know. We're complaining, but it's still going to make almost probably like $750 to $800 million. So it's like boo-hoo, right? Like whatever. It's still pretty awesome numbers in terms of any movie. But that movie, I feel like for it to really have some like big time success, especially later in the year, and to kind of keep its momentum going, it just needed larger numbers is my thought. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes out. But right now we'll focus on, I think everything we're going to talk about is available in movie theaters or at home because we're going to cover one streaming film as well. So Shane, as you're the person who's kind of been dominating the, crushing tape out at your local movie theater when you're not, doing that for your local, children's sports team or whatever else you got going on, you busy man. You probably have seen, I'm looking at, the list of, what's, made money over the weekend, and it's most of what we're going to talk about. Like, the only thing that really, isn't pop, that we aren't going to cover today is probably The First Omen. Outside of that, I think we've seen, most of the top 10 movies that are available right now. And number one, and been number one for a few weeks now, is Godzilla, The X's Silent Kong, The New Empire, which made $31 million over this past weekend, and it's up to $361 million worldwide, $134 million domestic, and is kind of the reason why Dune also kind of lost a little bit of steam because it took away all their IMAX showings and all the other stuff, and is quietly being like a good success. Here that like quietly I didn't think was going to happen, but we did kind of talk about off air. Do you think this really is residual Godzilla minus one fanfare? Or like we kind of talked about it before it came out, but I don't know because it's so different.
It's so different. I think it's a little bit, but I do think it's residual Godzilla. If you want to like throw minus one or the Godzilla versus Kong and all that stuff, I just do think it is. It's Godzilla, whatever movie you enjoy. I do think minus one helped the Godzilla cause. I really do. So I think that's a big part of it. And a lot of people did enjoy Godzilla versus Kong for whatever it was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're a few movies in, and even like for what I said about Dune, the first Dune being during COVID times, and you can't really tell about box office. One of the big surprise box office numbers, one of the early successes, was the last Godzilla Kong matchup. So this one seemed destined to do at least decent numbers. I think a lot of people are shocked at how well it's doing. Had like an $80 million opening, which was like, again, Dune Part 2 numbers. So it's wild. This, of course, is the two ancient beings that we love so much, the Titans, the king of all monsters, all that stuff, Godzilla and Kong, coming back to clash in an epic battle as humans unravel their intertwined origins and connection to Skull Island's mysteries. Shane, this is all you, buddy. This was a Shane movie from the start, and now it just seems like it's one of those movies I don't even need to... There is no good or bad. It's, did it entertain you? Did it pass the muster of a person who just wanted to see these two go at it? Did it pass the muster for you?
Yes, it passed the muster. It did. I had to sit on this movie for a little bit. I know I shouldn't overanalyze a movie like this, but...
I just want to see you in quiet contemplation, like, afterwards, staring out your window, like, why? Why couldn't they cross the realms? I want them to be friends.
I was, because, you know, one who's seen like every movie within this universe, shared universe now, and you get the divide of, I want more humans in the movies. And we got that with Monarch, and we got that with Godzilla Minus One. Right. So this is back to the old story. Human story plot doesn't throw that out the window, and let's get mashing.
Right.
So what I like in this movie is it did pare down the amount of human interaction in this movie to just pretty much Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens was a good addition. He kind of like added the comic relief as like the Titan veterinarian, believe it or not.
Oh,
like,
nice. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you go for school for that, man? Like, you were looking for jobs for so long, man. Like, why didn't you think of that one? Yeah.
And then, of course, the little girl from the Kong Godzilla crossover, and she played a key part in this movie.
Right.
So really, those are the four humans in this movie, really, which they kind of knew going in what they wanted to make. And they were successful for the most part. We get, of course, Kong and Skull Island and Godzilla in his realm. And everyone's like, well, as long as they don't go to each other's realms, then they'll be fine.
Right.
So but of course, there's something going on in Skull Island where this trying to find out where this SOS signal is coming from. Then we get, of course, this is not a spoiler, Scar King gets involved in this as the main heavy in the movie. And he makes his way to try to conquer Earth or whatever, going through one of the portals that we see. So you get some action at the beginning of the movie with Kong. I will say this movie felt like it wanted to be just exclusively a King Kong movie.
Right.
And they're like, well, we kind of have to throw Godzilla in here from time to time. And that's kind of what it felt like.
Right.
It was like mainly a Kong movie focusing on Skull Island and Hollow Earth, which honestly, I'm kind of over the whole Hollow Earth stuff.
Yeah.
And we kind of get why Scar King is so powerful. I won't spoil it because it's not in the poster or any of the trailers, but there's a reason why he is so formidable. So Godzilla does eventually make his way down. So the fun part was when Godzilla and Kong are on screen together. Mm-hmm. That is like the fun part of the movie, and it works.
Right.
Of course, they have their own little battle before they team up, and that was actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the end boss battle was entertaining. It could have been a little longer, I thought. They kind of like tighten it up and shorten it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But overall... It does, for all you folks, it does, this movie does show you how Godzilla becomes pink instead of blue, and it makes sense within the movie, so just calm down. I heard that a lot, too. Why is he pink all of a sudden?
Right.
It makes sense.
But is he like the Empire State Building in New York City, where, like, depending on what team is playing, that he just turns whatever
he
color?
Lights him up,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I found kind of laughable in this movie is they went out of their way to telegraph what was coming or what they were setting up. Like when Godzilla powered up, it was like they made sure you saw it on screen how much he powered up. Like he's powered up 200% now.
Oh, yeah.
Like they just telegraphed all of that.
Sure.
Right? We get a surprise Titan visitor back in this universe, and I'm not going to spoil it about who it is. That kind of connects with the small girl from Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just kind of leave that alone. But it was a successful movie. I thought the best character was that little mini Kong that you saw in the trailer.
Yeah, Diddy Kong. Yeah.
Like, yeah, Diddy Kong. Can we say that still? No, I don't know.
Diddy Kong, yeah.
Right?
Is that where all the...
Yeah, I don't know.
They're all in Hollow Earth or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was very funny, kind of added the comic relief to Kong's little sidekick there. I thought they did a good job because Kong actually relayed a lot of emotion in this movie, more so than some of the actors.
Yeah.
And he's like the character you gravitate toward and you feel to because he's actually, you know, more close to a human than Godzilla. So overall, fun movie. and contemplating comparing it to everything else in this universe, it's not as good as Kong versus Godzilla. I will say that was the better overall movie.
Right.
Better than Godzilla King of the Monsters. Okay. I will say that because of Kong. The addition of Kong lasts, and they do set it up where they can't continue within this universe if they want to, but if they end it here, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But based on the money and the box office that it's doing, I am pretty sure they're going to roll something else out. And again, I'm fine with it. Yeah, I am fine with this. So this is for the Godzilla and Titan freaks who just want to see monsters mash. This is up your alley. But if you're looking for story, then you might as well just go back to watching Godzilla Minus One,
yeah,
which is a great movie. Or go watch Monarch on Apple TV. So,
yeah, so there's no crossover on any of that stuff. It's just the continuation of this movie version that started with the
Godzilla 2014, right?
Yeah, I was trying to remember the director's name.
Andrew Wingard?
Wingard, yeah. So, yeah, from his early one with Bryan Cranston, yes, all the way through.
Yeah, all the way through. You get more portals like they showed you in Monarch, but they don't mention anyone in that movie, or I'm sorry, TV series, but you do get more of the portals that they discover through Monarch, and they got it mapped out more. So there's more Monarch in here.
Right.
They're more prevalent as far as their expansion of where they are, like in Monarch, the show. But that's the only connection. They don't name names. They don't talk about anything else. This is straight from the Wingard universe, pretty much.
Gotcha. Well, listen, I mean, like you said, it's making a truckload of money. It's probably going to continue just like, you know, your Fast franchise, all these other ones that it was just like, it doesn't, like, reality doesn't matter, like, you know, suspension of disbelief, anything that they add in here, it's like, no, we just want to see this basic concept of these giant, you know, titans that we love so much just keep going at it and find some way to get them together. So
And Wingard does a great job with the kaiju battles or titan battles, and so I can throw a score on this.
Sure.
I did give it a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Because of the entertainment value.
Now, I think before this movie came out, we were kind of like, you probably need to see Skull Island before this movie. Did that hold up for you? Or do you need to see probably the last couple?
No, I would say you're right. It would really, really help to see Skull Island.
Okay.
If you're going to pick one to watch before this, see Skull Island or Kong versus, because there's some character crossover, Rebecca Hall and Brian Tyrese from that movie. But you would be lost if you did not see Kong versus Godzilla. But definitely Skull Island. Check that out because it sets up everything that's going on in this universe now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, from one set of monkey titans or whatever to another, Monkey Man came out over this past weekend. This is directed, first-time director, Dev Patel, who's also starring in the movie as the, you know, I guess you could say the titular character, Monkey Man, which this movie made a modest $12 million over the weekend. I think for a movie that like a lot of people didn't really know about, and Dev Patel is not exactly a household name just yet. He's more of like an indie darling that's kind of on the come up, would you say, Shane?
Yep.
So for this movie to be like, the big appeal is that, pardon the pun, that it's produced by executive producer Jordan Peele, that he's more of the name trying to sell the movie as much as anything else going on in here. But when I first got wind of this movie, because sadly, this was originally a Netflix original film. That it was supposed to be. And then Jordan Peele and Monkey Paw purchased the film from Netflix. I don't fully know how that happened or why it happened or any of those things. Cause usually Netflix is the purchaser. I don't think I've ever heard them selling off a movie to somebody else. So I must've been a decent amount of money, a decent amount of, you know, clout from Peele to just be like, I can do this, you know, and he managed to get it the rights to this film that's, you know, early things before it came out, a lot of people are like, it's, you know, Indian John Wick. And I don't think it's that, but we'll get into that. But what it is a movie about an anonymous young man who unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systematically victimize the poor and the powerless. So it's getting very well reviewed. We both saw this movie. I would say for my money, I quite like this movie. It's interesting for everything that was like, this is Indian John Wick. I push back on that slightly because the motivations are different. It's not really gun-fu. It's more just a lot of hand-to-hand violence, which I actually like. A lot of these scenes are staged in places like, you know, bars and other places where it's like a lot of close quarter, a lot of like glasses getting broken over people's heads and stuff. So interestingly, the action will be maybe partially akin to closer to Roadhouse, which we'll talk about later, except just I thought they actually did a better job. So we'll get there on that one too. But this one I had a lot of fun because it has almost as much in common with Batman than it does John Wick. Because it's like this, you know, this story of, you know, a guy having his parent taken away from him, trying to take on the world himself, failing, going away, getting resurrected by a group of people to kind of like train him up, heal him up, and then get him back out onto his vengeance. So there's a lot of commonalities there a little bit. You know, obviously, there's no duplicitous Ra's al Ghul type thing going on, but there is a lot of like structural things, like mm-hmm. a Batman story. But you know, I think I've never seen probably Dev Patel be as good of a leading man, I think, than anything with this. I mean, it's very minimalistic. You know, it's very straightforward. It's, you know, you took this away from me, now I'm going to burn it all to the ground. So the simplicity helps. And I think where the movie kind of gets murky or fails slightly is to maybe like get those rest of the pieces together, like building up like the political aspect and where all the pieces fit of like how his village got burned and his mother was killed and all these things. You get enough of it that it doesn't derail the movie. But I think they could have done a better job kind of putting everything on the tracks to get you there. But I will say, when that movie ended, I was like, that's how you fucking end a movie. So I was into it. What did you think, Shane?
Yeah, echo a lot of the same thoughts. I enjoyed this movie. I thought Dave, like you said, Dev Patel was great. Fantastic, right?
Yeah.
And it's I'm so sick of every revenge action movie coming out. It's like, oh, that's like John Wick. It's like, it's not. But they do drop a John Wick reference in this movie.
They do. And I thought that was very funny. Yeah,
I thought it was fun and funny, right? But I do like you hit the nail on the head when it is like structurally almost like Batman Begins, though he does have a better skill set of like fighting as this movie opens up, right? But he's not honed in and his skills not as refined. But he does have the foundation there, right? And he does have a plan in place. So I did like that whole first act. Where it kind of, I understand the second act too, but it kind of, that's where it kind of slowed up. And I'm like, all right, can we just hurry this along just a little bit? Like,
right.
But like you, I did want more of the political aspects. They show you in short snippets, like the atrocities that go on in India with the real clips, news clips they were kind of splicing in there in one of the segments, right. Which I liked.
Yeah.
But they didn't really dive too far into that. They just kept the focus on, this is his mission. This is what happened to his mom. And let's move forward, right?
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that. And once he got rehabilitated, the third act was freaking awesome, right?
Yeah.
But the action scenes, like you said, you know what it reminded me of a little bit? And you brought up Roadhouse, but it just reminded me of like a South Korean action film.
It did.
As opposed to like a John Wick.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I was like, I'm on board with this, man. Like, and someone at work was like, is it more graphic than... I'm like, no, this is, if you watch John Wick, it's as graphic as that. It's not any worse, you know? But I did, and I loved the way it ended. I was like, okay. A little anticlimactic because I thought his biggest fights were up until he got to the Indian Freddie Mercury up there.
Yes.
And disposed of him pretty easily. Yeah. But yeah, I really, for an effort for his first time director and like real leading man and like in an action movie... I thought it was great. I really did. And it had the perfect runtime. It was right at 2 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish we had a little more out of his little sidekick that he worked with. I wanted to see just a little. I don't know why. I just liked that character. And I just wanted to see him get back with Monkey Man or Kid or whatever he is and go. I did like the ring announce work by was it Charlotte Copley?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a fun action-packed movie, especially the first act and the third act, and you have, of course, your second act where the story and his journey kind of like really focuses in on. But yeah, I really did enjoy this movie a heck of a lot.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And like you said, you're very spot on with the Korean action flick thing, and including they kind of have, especially in that second half, that last like couple of fights going into from the bar to the VIP to the whole thing. The music drops got better and better as the music as the movie went on, and to the point of like every like, you know, angry white boy or reformed angry white boy is like sitting in there when that like metal version thing kicks in. You're like, motherfucker, you're just like, you want to crank it up just as much as they are. And it's like, ah, oh, so cool. But yeah, I think if I had more momentum with that final boss kind of a thought, you know, I would have been like over the moon with this movie.
Right.
And when I knew I wasn't, I was like, oh, that's where the structure kind of tilts and gets muddy and murky and whatever, and that's why I don't feel as much as I'm like just leaving the theater. But if it was all about getting back to that, you know, head of security kind of guy who was really the face of everything for most of the movie, I think people probably felt it right up until that point to the highest extent, right? Because you get a rematch, you get him going back to the street fights before he does it too. And showing the improvement. That was really cool and well done. So there's a lot to like in this movie. It almost felt like, obviously two very different movies and genres, but it felt like Love Lies Bleeding, where I was like, I want stuff like this to exist. I really like this. And I can see all the flaws, but I still like it so much that I'm probably still going to give it that 3.754 rating, because I just want this to exist in the world. I want more of it. I want, you know, I like these performances and I like this type of movie. So I just want to rise up with something like this versus like just another, you know, franchisey thing to toss on the fire.
Yeah, right. I was shocked. I didn't know this Netflix had the rights and this was their movie, original movie.
Yeah, it really pissed me off because I started to see like the trailer or whatever. There was even like a Super Bowl trailer, I think, for this one or something, or it was in the playoffs. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's coming to Netflix. Wait, what the hell? And then I like read an article. I was like, are you kidding me? God damn.
Wow. What a fumble by Netflix, really. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
This would have probably been like, one of, if not the best, like Netflix movie original I've probably seen
in some time. Yeah, I mean, like, especially for us who we really like their action stuff. We've talked about in the past, like The Night Comes for Us and things of that nature. It would have been right there,
right up there. Yeah.
So it kind of falls right in line with all that stuff. So yeah, it is disappointing that I can't be like, this is a number one with a bullet, best one. Because not to get too much in the weeds with my own stuff, but I just released my top five Netflix originals of 2024 article because the first quarter of the year just ended. So go check that out if you're so inclined for what's on Netflix.com. But man, yeah, if this was on the list, that's it. It probably is number one. So it's tough.
So your score is a 4. Can I get you up to a 4 on this one?
Again, Andrew cheat code, it's probably 3.75, but it's probably going to be 4. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'm not going by Andrew cheat code, so I gave it a 4.
Yeah, it's right there. Like, to me, when I'm putting, like, best movies of the year, not to spoil whatever we're going to talk about for the rest, but this movie is, like, right below Love, Lies, Bleeding, I think, where it's, like, right up towards the top of the list.
Yep, I agree.
So, excellent. Glad we're on board with that one. That could have been a fight. We would have had to put on masks and gotten all freaky, start punching out rice, whatever we got to do. Would have been fun.
We'll fight with those masks on, though. Golly.
So drippy and bloody. And how many times can you wash that poorly and keep wearing it? I don't know. That's gross. I don't even want to think about that anymore. Also, a movie that maybe you don't want to think about anymore. We'll see, because you soloed on this one as well. The next movie on our list, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which is the follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife. We're in this new Spengler family version of everything with Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon. And obviously, you know, the was it Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things and a bunch of other people that they keep adding on the way, as well as bringing back in the Aykroyds and the Murrays and the Hudsons of the world to keep going back to the fold in bits and pieces, from what I understand. This movie is making okay money. It's interesting. Again, it kind of can't be fully compared to Afterlife. As far as that goes, because that was also during like a COVID-ish era type thing. But if you look at the numbers, it's not exactly encouraging box office to where I don't know if this is going to continue. And you can also let me know the kind of movie tips to that. But right now, it's sitting at $138 million total, with $88 domestic and $49 internationally. And of course, this has been out for, you know, 17 days now, a couple, you know, 2.5 weeks, and slowing down. I think this past weekend it was third behind Monkey Man, made $9 million. I don't know if that's gonna cut it to keep this continuing. But Shane, what did you think of the actual film itself? Because I will tell you, I'm a big, you know, Ghostbusters fan of the original, the first couple movies. Everything else since then has kind of been like, at best, a karaoke version of trying to, you know, recapture that same stuff, but make it more of a family movie, which I'm not really on board for. And this one just seemed more of the same or worse. So what do you got for me, Shane? Tell me whether I should see this movie or not.
Just wait for it to come out in streaming somewhere. It's a harmless movie. It's harmless. It really is. It's mediocre and meh at best. I wouldn't say meh. It sounds like a negative connotation, but it's mediocre at best.
Okay.
It is more like a family drama, which I'm fine with, right? Like, that's the part they should have maybe kept more focus on. I get it. With the Spangler, their family carrying out Paul Rudd, like, you know, do we call him dad yet? Is he dad? He's not really a part of the family. Whatever. They get into the whole that in this movie. You get the addition by, I can't pronounce this guy's name.
Kumail Nanjiani.
There you go. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
He kind of kickstarts this whole movie off with bringing a relic he had from his grandmother, that Dan Aykroyd, who's way too happy to be in this movie.
Yeah.
I can understand why he doesn't get any work. Jesus Christ, he hams it up. But he comes back and is a very important part of the third act, as they pretty much, the beginning of the movie opens up. You got this demon frost monster. I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. I forget his name. That's how forgettable he was.
Right.
And they captured him and encapsulated him in this trinket that he delivers to Dan Aykroyd. All of a sudden, he's trying to escape and eventually escapes. He's so forgettable as a villain boss. Like, you forget he's, like, I don't know. There's stretches where I'm like, can we just, like, show him a little more? Like, right. It just was ridiculous. The action was okay. It just pacing and just was a little off. And I just felt like they were jumping too much into like the family unit. And then, no, we got these characters to focus on. We got to focus on the original cast from Ghostbusters. Cause now you got Annie Potts picking up a pack and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Ernie Hudson was probably the best best part of the original cast in this movie.
Which is really sad. I mean, I like Ernie Hudson, but that's not who you go for, obviously.
No, but he kind of like is running the institution and doing all the technology and funding for all the Ghostbuster stuff that's going on. And like I said, you get Bill Murray in here and he just doesn't want to be there. He's like in two scenes and it's like, hey, how much do I get paid to say this line?
Right.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to say it and let's go.
Yeah.
So, and unbelievably, how long can you be mayor of New York? Like, I thought there's a limit.
Oh,
apparently,
God.
They brought back the original mayor from 1984, and 40 years later, he's still the mayor of New York.
No.
It's
from what I understand, it's the guy who he says has no dick. It's that character. Well, it's at least that actor is the one playing the mayor.
The mayor, right?
Right.
I thought he was the mayor in the first Ghostbusters.
No, he's the one who they're fighting in the mayor's office with.
Oh, okay. So, well, now he's mayor. Sorry, now he's mayor.
Yeah.
All right.
But
so,
still,
even
he's still probably, like, how long did it take him to take over? I don't know.
Right, yeah. So that
also,
whole thing.
Also, why would he be that? Because if you ever watch the original, like, he's the reason why the whole chaos exists, and they're arguing with him the whole time. Like, why would that man become mayor?
And that's the thing. He still argues with them, right? He still wants to disband the Ghostbusters. And they act like nothing happened 40 years ago. I don't know. The whole story. I know. Shake your head. Because it's true. I'm like, why? You saw it happen 4 years ago. Now you don't believe them. All of a sudden, they're still a threat to you. Like, it just.
Yeah. How many times you got to prove themselves, you know, at this point?
Yeah.
On top of that, whatever.
And that's what it was. That's what it was. Again, a kid's movie. Take your kids to this. They'll enjoy it. But other than that, it's a mediocre movie. I got really nothing else to add to this movie because there's nothing to add to this movie. Like, there's
did you
want to
choke
there.
On the nostalgia stuff? Because we do have Slimer. We do have the small Stay Puffs again and all this other stuff. So did that do anything for you?
They did a good job of not jamming it down your throat. Like, okay. What you saw in the trailer is what you kind of got out of those characters.
Right.
The Stay Puff stuff didn't bother me. I thought they were funny, some of them. And they weren't in it a lot. You saw was Slimer, is that what
yeah,
it was?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like in two or three scenes, and that was about it. And again, Bill Murray was in there for two scenes. It was Aykroyd, who just was way over the top and happy to get a job. yeah, so they did a good job without whacking you over the head with all the nostalgia stuff. They did, so... In that aspect, they did a fine job. But overall, it's just a fine movie, you know, fine. If it was on Amazon Prime or Netflix, yeah, watch it. It's worth the watch there, but not in a theater.
Do you find it to be better or worse than Afterlife? Because I was...
It's worse.
It's worse.
It's worse.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Because I was more critical of Afterlife, I think, than a lot of other people when it came around.
Yeah, it's worse than Afterlife. And honestly, I think they should just, at this point, kill the franchise.
Okay.
And not to say this is a... terrible movie to kill it on, but it just was. I don't see where they go from here, and I don't see how they improve on what they just put out for this movie. Like, to be honest with you,
they'll probably go TV show.
Yeah, I could. That might be that format might actually work better for this property.
Probably.
To be honest with you,
yeah. Especially when you're trying to include Stranger Things kids and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of a decent formula to go from, you know, because that's going to end. Bring them right back into the fold. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not movie going to the theater worth seeing. So.
Right. All right. Well.
I gave it 2.5, by the way. That was my rating, was 2.5.
Okay. That's about right. Yeah. If you went more, I'd probably be a little squinty eyed.
Questioning me more than you already questioned.
A little bit. Yeah. Listen, man, it's one of those, if my kids had seen any of the previous ones, I would have been in the theater the same as you. So.
Yeah.
No shade on that whatsoever. As far as the box office is going, the next in line is The First Omen, which I hear is actually better than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, critically, a lot of people are more impressed with this movie and not kind of like... It feels like I was waiting for just a redux of the Exorcist argument from last year. Like, one too many, why do we need to resurrect this franchise kind of a conversation. But no, I hear good things. Though
Me too. I
will say, as a person who saw back to back kind of like demon antichrist movies, I was kind of like, am I gonna go to a third in a week? I almost did the double feature. Yeah, I almost did the double feature last night with Monkey Man, seeing First Omen, but I just ran out of gas myself. But there are other ones to talk about. We'll get to Immaculate. Which was number 9 this weekend, which is not great for the fact that it came out, again, only 17 days, you know, a couple weeks in the box office. It's made $18 million, which is okay, because this movie probably costs, like, next to nothing, especially with Sydney Sweeney being part of the producing team and selling this movie. She probably is more taking back end than she is, like, costing her fee. Per se, to like pay her as like a lead of this movie. This is about Cecilia, a woman of devout faith who is warmly welcomed to the picture perfect Italian countryside, where she is offered a new role at an illustrious convent. But it becomes clear to Cecilia that her new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. Like I said, this movie is running out of steam. It kind of made $5 million open, slowly getting up to, like, it'll probably make like $20 million. My guess is it'll probably be on PVOD in weeks from now. So, you know, get out there and see it in the theaters if you want to do so before it goes away, because it is, you know, just trudging along, making, you know, $400,000 a day. Like, not anything to write home about. But it is getting pretty well reviewed, pretty well received in terms of this movie. I liked it. I liked the tone. I liked a lot of things about it. But I think again, another one of those movies that, you know, tried to hide the football and it didn't live up to its end. It kind of gave us one of those, like, we've seen a bunch of these, right? It's the post Get Out era of horror stuff where it's like, it isn't what you think it is. And instead it's some mad scientist kind of like thinking, you know, some larger picture, you know, kind of, you know, this lab or this some kind of like setup to do something bigger and bigger, that it's all some big conspiracy and it's not just the kind of elemental freak out weird stuff that we kind of been going through the whole movie, and takes a very big tone shift towards the end of the film. And I was on board enough. It didn't kill the movie for me, but I think the movie as a whole was just kind of trudging along, relying a lot on the fact that it's Sydney Sweeney. I think if you take her out and put in a different person, am I as compelled? Am I as engaged in this movie? Probably not. There are some things that make it, you know, kind of cool. Like I said, I liked a lot of the atmosphere stuff. I liked the convent. I like kind of the claustrophobic atmosphere of it at times. But I think the way it ends, especially it does, it really pulls out literally at the end to kind of take you out from seeing what we all probably want to see and get with what's actually going on here. So I don't know. This movie was like a three out of five for me. It was a fine enough time at the movies,
okay,
but it didn't bowl me over.
I like this movie. I did. The most unbelievable part of this movie is there's no nun walking the face of the earth that looks as good as Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, God, no.
And, yeah, I mean, like, she's incredible.
Although,
like, there's no way.
Mrs. Davis, I watched that whole thing on Peacock, so that's like a close second, I guess.
Right. But they even, like, make jokes about that in the movies, like, you know, almost like you're too good looking to be a nun. Like, you know what
they
I mean?
Did that at the airport, right? They had that. Yeah. I don't want to derail your review too much, but like, I was there watching the movie with someone else, and like, they do that scene where it's very uncomfortable. He thinks he can get away because he's talking in Italian. She doesn't know Italian very well, so he's like, you know, she's like way too hot to be a nun, yeah, or whatever. Says it to her face, and then like, there's stuff later where there's a confrontation between the priest at the convent. And I don't know if he's like supposed to be a bishop or whatever, though, like one of the high priest guys,
yeah,
and whatever, they're all like yelling at her, like, have you ever had sex? All these other things, like this inquisitive thing. I wanted that guy from the airport to come back and be like, told you she was too hot to be, you know, you know, I just wanted more of that guy to just pop up, like just to be, you know, like the, right, like the jackass guy from Happy Gilmore, you know, just like he kind of like just pops up every now and then, says his catchphrase and get out. So I like that guy. So yeah, continue. Yeah.
That was perfect. That was perfect.
Yeah.
But no, like you, I like the atmospheric mood this movie put me in. I like the claustrophobic feel, kind of the mystery of what the heck was going on, because it did give me for a little bit like Rosemary Baby vibes.
Yeah, sure. Because it's supposed to be that kind of movie.
Yeah, right? In this movie. But like you said, when they pulled the curtain back and they're like, this is what's going on, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll roll with it, yeah, right? Whatever. But it didn't take me completely out, because there was enough shock and awes in this movie, just in a natural way too, not like jump scares or anything, yeah, like that. Like the crazy sister that showed up and cut a lock of her hair off kind of freaked me out, yeah, a little bit. You know what I mean?
I like some of those older, like just weird priestesses that are like, yeah, really happy about what's going on and just kind of like, yeah, out of their mind. I was like, oh, this is kind, yeah, of fun. Yeah.
You know, and her friend who eventually got her up and comings with the whole tongue thing. And
yeah.
Yeah, there are some gruesome moments in here, but it kept me on my toes and it kept me interested in the film. And I had no problem with the final act. I was curious enough to see what dropped, but I think that just kind of left that up to your own imagination of what actually happened there. But I was like, are they going to go there? Is she going to? Yeah, she, yeah. So
yeah,
it had some balls in that aspect, but I did like,
I guess,
I did like this film, and I rated it just a little higher than you did, because this is a horror film. It gives you vibes, but I wouldn't call it a traditional horror film. It is more of like a horror film, as Rosemary Baby is a horror film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Theme wise, yes, but no, I had a good time with this movie, and I gave it a 3.5 at the end of the day, because I really did like a lot of the elements that it brought to the screen.
Yeah.
even though it got murky there in that third act, but I was fine with it up until that point, so I didn't let that derail. 3/4 is a movie that I really enjoyed up until that point.
Yeah. I gotta say, man, like the only thing I kept thinking was, God, how long does DNA really stay on?
Yeah,
like,
I know,
like,
right?
The science the whole of part it. Well, like, don't think too hard.
Yeah, don't think too hard. Cause I'm like, that's why I shook my head. I'm like, really? That's your reveal? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, whatever.
How long was that exposed to the elements that, like, no trace right. stuff went away? Yeah. What are we talking about here? Yeah. How do you know that's exactly where, like, where'd you find it? You know, all that stuff. Like, I have. Just a billion questions, you know, just I be know. Like sourcing everything. I think they kind of like just kind of played it out there and played their hand, but I don't know. So it's a bunch of things that, like I said, if it's not Sydney Sweeney, are we all being like as engaged with this and letting some of this stuff just wash over us more because we're just like, we want to see more Sydney Sweeney? I'll say yeah. But like,
yeah, she does a great job. Yeah, she does a great job carrying this movie. Like, it's all her, and she does a great job.
Yeah, I'm glad her being in something like this. I'm glad that she's producing something like this, and I think it's a cool thing that we'll probably get more of this if she is more in charge of her career at this point, post anyone but you, and some like and Euphoria and all these things where like her stardom is up high enough that she can probably pull off more of this going forward.
Right. This was a Neon production, right?
Well, they picked it up. Yeah. They made the movie and then she sold it.
Okay. Because I read, even though it didn't, like you just said, didn't make a ton in the box office, but for a Neon released movie, it's their best released money making film they've had. So, in that aspect, as small as that may be, that kind of, you know, bodes well in her direction, I would say.
Yeah. And listen, like, I believe Neon still has a first window streaming deal kind of a thing with Hulu too, which it bodes well for them too. So I think that'll be seen by a lot of people. It's not like it'll die on one of the smaller streamers or something. So yeah. Although that's again very interesting, especially now that Hulu is kind of like integrated with Disney, to see Disney having a movie like this on their leisure. So that's kind of fun for me too. But yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I'm a 3 out of 5, you're a 3.5. It's probably close, somewhere around all that. And like I said, it'll be fun to see if she likes to do more genre-fueled crazy stuff, because I think that works for her, and I'm into it going forward. I saw the one akin to this, not called The First Omen or whatever, Late Night with the Devil, which is a Shudder. Because I saw a lot of trailers for like IFC / Shudder films before this one came on. This one is a slightly different take than Immaculate, no nunnery or any of that thing, but we are unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms by following a live television broadcast in 1977 that goes horribly wrong. Think of like some competitor of like Johnny Carson at the time trying to, you know, do a ratings grab on a special Halloween episode where they bring in a skeptic to a lot of these things. A medium comes through and tries to read the audience. And you also have this psychologist, like paranormal psychologist kind of a thing, working with a young woman who survived a fire at the home of this cult that she used to live with, this satanic cult. And now she has like kind of like a demon inside of her that they interrogate and do like an interview with on the show. And it obviously all goes to hell. So this movie, you know, getting, again, pretty positive reviews, 7.5 on IMDb, amongst other quality scores all the way around. Even a 72 Metascore, which is pretty high for horror. This movie stars David Desmalchian, you know, who I've always liked. I've never seen him be a lead in anything that I can think of. I mean, he's always been that character actor that you love, whether it be Suicide Squad or, you know, Dune, Dark Knight. He's always in some franchise doing something crazy, you know. Yep. Even in TV, he bounces back and forth, all that stuff, but you always see him. He's been in the MCU. He was in the Weird Al movie. Like, he's all over the place, right? I like this guy. And I think he's very compelling in here. And in fact, I would probably say, even though he's the lead, he kind of is just this vessel to like kind of invite the mayhem in and then let everyone else kind of cook around him before it kind of consumes him in his character's natural demons and proclivities that he has outside of the studio. So including like stuff with his late wife who died of cancer, all this stuff. It's a very interesting setup. And the only criticism I have, I think it's a very cool idea. I think especially for a small budget film, I think it's very well done. The only thing I would say is that this movie, especially for being based in 1977, a low budget film, I was hoping when they got to the end and like some of the more amped up stuff with the devil, demon, whatever you want to call it, that it would be more practical and that it would be more stunning, especially because you're trying to do it in this kind of like degraded TV, you know, grainy looking video, like this documentary ish, like straight to tape TV 1977 look, that it really, it kind of took me out when it got like kind of very CGI ish and very, you know, tech heavy in certain spots where I was like, it's way cooler if this is more intimate and creepy and everything else. And that's the only thing. Otherwise, I was along for the ride on this one. I liked it a little better than Immaculate in terms of being in that demon zone. I think it's more of like a 3.5 for me and one of the more solid films. Maybe like a 3.25 if I'm cheat coding. All that. Cheater. I know. But it is. It's a movie, again. It's a movie you admire. You like. You know, the performances are good. I especially like the skeptic character who that they have on, who's like a former magician. Yeah, Ian Bliss. He was in the Matrix films. Yeah, I think he's an Australian actor, so we don't see him too much. But like, he definitely looks familiar if you saw him, and he's incredible because he kind of plays both lines, kind of being antagonistic to really drum up the demon stuff and feed into it, as well as being the guy who's trying to prove everybody wrong and then getting caught in the middle. So it's a cool spot to be in, very cool character. This is a recommend, but yeah, and probably, like I said, in a thinner field, it's probably in the top 5 or 6 movies I've seen this year so far.
Okay. I did want to see this movie, but the problem was down here, it's only showing like at 7:20 and 10:20 at night. So it's not showing a lot. So
yeah,
that's tough.
Yeah. I was lucky enough that the two theaters that it's in, one of them is like that, where it only plays at 10 o'clock at night. And unfortunately that was the one closer to me, of course. And then the one that's further away, they were playing the full slate. So I guess maybe it was doing better there. And again, for such a small movie, I'm sure like the budget's like minuscule, especially for IFC Shudder type films. They don't usually make a lot of money, and this one's like slowly built up a little bit of cash here, where it's like $8 or $9 million. So
yeah,
it's not bad, especially when you're like, you're competing against Sydney Sweeney, and she only made 18 internationally, you know, like total, you know, and this movie's just like half that. That's not bad.
No.
So, you know, it's not going to blow you away or anything, but it's definitely a movie that I think, you know, if it lasts another week or two in there, gets over 10 million, 10 to 12, and then has a good life on PVOD before it ends up on Shudder, cool.
Yeah.
That's a perfect probably amount of money for this type of film, and a success, at least critically, and then hopefully somewhat monetarily going forward.
Right. So I'm looking forward to it. So
yeah. And then we're going to round out here with a little round Roadhouse conversation. Your boy, Jackie D, Jake Gyllenhaal, with his amazing, amazing abs that cannot be ignored. This, of course, is Doug Liman's update on the 1980s Patrick Swayze film, kind of a cult classic B-movie from that time period that, you know, when that movie's on, that's a rewatchable movie to me, man. Like, yep. I will, like, Sam Elliott is amazing. the blind guitarist, the bar itself, like it's its own character.
Jeff Healy, you show that man some respect.
I'm sorry. You're right. Absolutely. I'm so sorry. but yeah, and then like the outlandish opulence of the guy who runs that town and his house, and you know, with the stuffed bear falling on people, like it's so dumb, but it's so iconically dumb that you just love it. And the violence is very trashy, but you love every minute. There, it's just a time capsule of something I like. So I was interested to be like, oh, well then what tone is this going to strike? How is it going to be different? How is it going to be similar? Those type of things. What did you think? Because did you come in here with the same reverence for the original Roadhouse before you got into this one?
Yeah, absolutely. Like like you said, anytime Roadhouse is on, yeah, it stays on. Like, I just watch it. It is one of my favorite Patrick Swayze movies, obviously, of all
sure.
time.
Yeah.
But, like, it encapsulates the 80s. You got your over-the-top stupid violence. You have your nudity in there,
yeah.
which is, you know, gratuitous nudity.
Right.
You know.
Learning karate by a body of water somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just everything you want in an 80s movie, man.
Yeah.
So when this movie, when I was, oh, man, let me just dance around this. I've seen this twice. I've seen Roadhouse on Amazon twice.
Really? Right? Okay.
I did. So quick, just lay up until I saw it twice. I saw it when it came out Thursday night because I was amped up. I'm like, all right, I'm really not into remakes. Let me watch it. First viewing, I hated it. I hated it.
Yeah.
I'm like, because it is people out there. It's not a, it's a total reimagining of the first one. That's all
yeah,
I can tell
sure.
you. It's a total reimagining of the first one. The only thing they have in common is they both bet a doctor. They both drink black coffee. And there's the line of no one really wins a fight.
Right.
Other than that, it's a total different movie.
Right.
Right. So my girl at the time started watching the new one and she couldn't get through the first half hour. So we went back and watched the original Roadhouse, which she's never seen.
Okay.
Liked it.
Nice.
Next night, she finishes Roadhouse. I'm like, you're going to finish that movie. And she ended up liking it. Like, it's not as good as the original one, but the acting got better. So that being said, my second viewing through it, I did enjoy it for what it was. After rewatching the original Roadhouse, right?
Mm.
But it's hard to differentiate the movies when you have a basis of comparison to the first one.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal knocks it out of the park. Like, he's great. I like his cool demeanor.
Yeah.
Ex-UFC fighter. It's believable, right? I like the setting being in Key West. That's fine. The fight scenes I thought were interesting. I thought the way Lyman kind of directed some of the POV, like you're really getting punched in the face with some of the stuff, I enjoyed, right?
Yeah.
My hangups initially were, well, he doesn't really teach the bouncers anything. There's not a lot of fights actually in the bar in this movie. But I went back and watched the first one. Patrick Swayze doesn't give any tips to the bouncer except for stay cool, be cool, stay cool, be cool. That's it.
Yeah.
So there's no Sam Elliott in this movie, no type of friend that comes into town. I was a little disappointed in that. But, you know, was Conor McGregor over the top? Yes, he was. But fight scenes, he was fine. But yes, he's an over-the-top villain. I will say the villains in this movie don't live up to the first one. Like, he's just a spoiled rich guy. That's it. He's a spoiled rich brat.
Right.
Who's trying to build some resort.
Yep.
And this Roadhouse is, like, blocking him from doing that.
Yeah.
And he is way too much over the top, right?
He always is, that guy.
I know, yeah. But he really
Once I saw his face, I was like, this movie's not going to be good. But go ahead. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the acting is not great, except for Gyllenhaal. But I did like the final act, and I do like I like the final act. It's I warmed up to it on the second viewing, but comparatively speaking, just go back and watch the first one, right, if you've never seen it. Now, from what I heard, and this is, seems to be the popular opinion, is for the younger generation who never saw Roadhouse and saw this and everything I'm reading and hearing is they really enjoyed this version of Roadhouse. But because, again, they have nothing to compare it to the original one.
Right.
Which I found interesting. So if you've never seen the Patrick Swayze one, you will probably enjoy this more than the person who's seen, like me and Andrew, who've seen Roadhouse. So that's kind of what my feeling was on this movie.
Yeah. My feeling is it's far too winky and knowing for me to like it. And then Conor McGregor just took a fucking sledgehammer to it in the second half. The first half hour, ironically, for like for whatever your girlfriend or whoever, like or even yourself, maybe if you didn't like the first 20-30 minutes, unfortunately, I thought that was the better part of the movie, because at least I didn't know fully how they were going to do this, and it was just mostly him kind of like, all right, well, I got to do something here, work at this place, not knowing all the pieces, you know, just coming in and just, you know, I'll figure it out. I'll work at this bar. I'll, you know, be at this small town with this, you know, cheeky girl at the fucking bookstore and all these kind of like side characters, whatever. It was fine, but at least I like, it was still bouncy. It was playful. It was a little, you know, it was similar enough, but like it seemed modern enough that I was just like, okay, this is cool. And then I think once it started getting bigger, once Conor McGregor gets into it, all these things, I just thought like, I just don't care. It just seemed like another action movie. And in fact, a lot of the fight scenes that you were saying you were into, some of them I thought went on way too long and got too out, because I did not really enjoy those like kind of like, you know, handheld, like close, like almost seems like, here, grab this fucking iPhone that we stuck under a table or whatever, like these kind of like way too intimate and jangly kind of things in between these stylized action set pieces that they kind of establish beforehand. I thought it went too far back and forth. I don't think they knew exactly what type of movie they wanted to do. I think tonally it was all over the map. And I think that's because they were probably part in their head about the established film that already exists and then going into whatever this one is. Because if you look at the description of the original Roadhouse, it's hilarious. Like a bouncer hired to clean up the baddest honky-tonk, you know, armed with a black belt in karate and a degree in philosophy. That is the dumb shit that made it worth something, you know. And the Double Deuce is its own thing and whatever. I thought that had way more character than just some kind of open almost tiki bar in the fucking Keys, yeah. You know, so I don't know. I like how simple, and I don't know, there's like a tone to Roadhouse is exactly what Swayze's character is. It's calm in a sea of shit, and that's how the movie plays out. This one, Gyllenhaal's kind of like in between. You're right. Like, I feel like he doesn't do enough. Like, Swayze, yeah, in there doesn't do enough. But like, him and Sam Elliott have a very good chemistry.
Yeah.
And I feel like just him being there is its own presence. And he's just, the new one, they openly say, like, oh, you're like you're the white hat coming to clean up this town in the Western against all the black hats, you know, whatever. And like, Yeah. We know what the first movie was, too. I get it. It's very much a kind of neo-Western, dumbed-down, B-Western kind of a thing. I get it. But to put, like, that, like, you know, this isn't meta-commentary. You're just, like, slamming it down. It's a hat-on-a-hat thing. So, I don't know. I thought it was too knowing, too winky, too shiny, too whatever, that I was just like, I could have been into it if they maybe made a better storyline. I don't know what it was missing entirely, but there was too many things that just bored me or took me out.
Listen, I agree. Like, going back to the Swayze movie, I do like how he integrates himself in the town more. Like, with, there's more townspeople that he interacts
with.
Here you get the cheeky girl in the bookstore, and that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
What also I kind of like wanted an answer to was when Billy, I think that's his name, comes up and shows him what happened in the UFC. Like, why did Dalton do what he did? Like, they never explained it. They explained it in the first Patrick Swayze, because he slept with a woman he didn't know was married.
Right.
And had a gun pulled in his face.
Right.
That's why he killed a man.
Yeah.
Here, we're left to like, he just has rage issues. Like, right. I don't know.
Right.
Because up until that point, he does have that cool Swayze demeanor where he's like, all right, I'm going to break this, that, and the other, and you know, whatever. I thought that was cool. But tonally, like you said, I cringed at the line where they're fighting. You'll know what I'm talking about. In the last scene here, and they fight on top of a piano. And I think the line was, this piano's out of tune. And as he's getting his head smashed against the keys, and McGregor's like, it sounds just fine to me.
So
you
know,
I'm like, why is that line there? No. Like, you didn't set that up to be there. Now, if they had all those corny lines throughout the movie, it would have made sense.
Yeah.
But they didn't set it up properly. And that was like, oh, really? You're going to? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Move on.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, whatever. It is the most downloaded, well-to-do Amazon original movie they've ever had.
Yeah, which, again, what are we competing against, right?
I know.
I don't know. I don't even know.
At the end of the day, I gave it a 2.5.
Yeah, I think I may have given it slightly lower, but, you know, again, what are we talking about? Between a 2 and a 2.5, you know, it's like, whatever. It existed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't find anyone out there being like, No. Conor McGregor made the movie better. Not a single soul.
No, universally, he's getting panned.
He's getting murdered.
And listen, he's not an actor, right? I get it. He's not. So how much should we kill him for not actually being an actor? But it just seemed like he played himself the way he was walking around with the lats and whatever. He just seemed to play himself. And I'm trying not to kill him because he's a UFC fighter. He's a character in real life. Like,
he's miscast, is what happened.
Yeah.
Or, like, he's given too much. Like,
he's given too much.
Like, he should have the amount of screen time Post Malone had in this movie. Instead, he's given the whole second half, practically. You know?
Well, they should have used him like the villain in Swayze's character. He had a fight. He was in the movie, didn't say a damn word until, like, the end where he's like, I banged you, like, guys like you in prison. I think that's the only thing he said in the movie.
Yeah.
And they had their fight, and that was it. You're right. That's what McGregor should have been, like, scaled down to, was, like, he's there as a presence, and then throw him in at the end for the final boss fight, and then let that be it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, every time he spoke, people did not appreciate, including myself, so.
Or understand half the stuff he said.
Oh, yeah. No, I watched it with the subtitles for a reason. You know, not a good look. He just seemed like, especially the way they shot him a lot from below. So they tried to make him bigger, but instead he just looked like an angry leprechaun. It's choices, right? And I like Doug Liman a lot. You know, I was excited for this movie because of his CV, and I just think he miffed it. I just don't think it was a clear vision. And for him to be so mad about not getting this movie in theaters, I think is now a ridiculous statement. Though, again, how many ridiculous, you know, action movies do make the theater? So I guess he has a choice, but yeah, whatever.
Seriously, Andrew, like, I thought the same thing. I was like, he seems totally ridiculous now because this movie would have bombed in the theater. Yeah. It's not movie theater worthy.
No.
This is a perfect streaming movie to watch at home.
Yeah.
Like, if I had to pay money to see this, I would have been irate.
Yeah.
I would have been so mad.
But that's what's interesting, right? And you're gonna slap back at me in a minute. But, like, the quality difference between this and The Beekeeper isn't, like, crazy different. Like, it lives in the same genre in the same area, right? And Statham is a state is a thing, right? Of course. But you can make an argument Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor should probably make enough money with a franchise IP kind of a grab remake kind of thing that should have made at least Beekeeper money. Maybe, like, you put it out in the same time period, in that dumpuary period, and let it cook. Does that work? I don't know, but I'll tell you, the story is, you know, I mean, The Beekeeper probably made more money than it should have, which is hilarious. And Statham gets to ride in whatever, like, he gets to smile ear to ear, making another one of these movies, you know, soon enough. But this movie, I think you're right. It probably would have been received, and I don't know how much money it would have made, but it probably is a better story. That it's what you said, the highest downloaded or highest viewed streamed movie of Amazon's, you know, studio's career or whatever. I think that probably has a better legacy or a better sounding legacy than whatever it's going to do. I don't think anyone's going to care, you know, in a month or two. Nobody's going to remember or care about this movie anyway. But, you know, for the time being, I think they actually probably chose right in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, they did.
So
they did.
All right, sir. Well, that's a six pack of movies, baby. We really banged it out. Yeah. And, you know, gave you guys a nice solid hour plus. So my voice is about to die after 2 weeks off the mics and being ravaged with a head cold. So I appreciate you all for sticking with us, coming back, checking out all these. Hopefully you've seen a bunch of these movies. You're going out to the theater, supporting them, doing all that. And of course, if you come back and listen to this later, you know, or maybe you just love Roadhouse and you wanted to just get through everything to get to the one streaming movie you saw, however you played it, I appreciate you for being here. Great job, Shane, by you, as always. Be sure to go out, tell a friend, give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening, Apple, Spotify, wherever you are. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss another episode, and be sure to come back next time for more recent activities.